Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
I'm trying to think here. Has anything happened in world sports since we last spoke on Monday? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Saudis took over golf. Messi turned down the Saudi cash in favour of the Apple dollars available in the US. And David Moyes reminded us that there is still some joy left in this horrible, shitty, farcical world that we all live in.
Yeah, he did. He bloody did, Owen, didn't he?
He did. Welcome to your Thursday taster menu. Will we start with that then, Murph? Do you want to start on the high?
Ah, come on. Why not, okay, Owen? Why not? What a beautiful man he is.
Explain the scenario here. We put out our Thursday pod late night Wednesday because Ken is traveling to Istanbul today for the Champions League final. The final segment of our late night podcast was recorded just moments after the West Ham manager had begun celebrating in style his first major trophy after more than 1,000 games as a manager.
You know, when was the last time you saw a football manager?
That's true. He's so overjoyed.
Just delighted. It's incredible. It was an incredible moment. I mean, you just couldn't help but laugh as you watched it. It was, you know, and feel a little.
I deserve this.
He did deserve it. He did deserve it. It's been a long time. I saw someone pointing out, no, well, he actually won League One, and you're like, it's not the same. It's his, you know, because he's in a situation where, you know, if they lost, they're talking about sacking. Well, surely they can't sack him now. Because that run down the sideline was the greatest moment in West Ham history. It was the best. It's the best moment in West Ham history.
Certainly better than
the goal.
You
know, I mean, you get these.
It was definitely better than
the goal. You get these moments, you know, Jose had one at Old Trafford. Alex Ferguson also at Old Trafford with Brian Kidd.
David Pleat.
You know what I'm talking about? Pleat. Of course. And these, I mean, it's literally Pleat. You know, a man who hasn't run like this in a while.
It's more Pleat than Mourinho, Ken.
He was a young man.
Yeah, because Mourinho.
Yeah, Mourinho was a young man back 40, in the day. You know?
41 years old. Yeah.
I thought for a second David Moyes was going to pull a knee slide and he thought better of it and went more David Pleat. He's continually running.
He's too experienced for that, Owen, to try that kind of stuff. I mean, that could, you know, he'd be carted off to hospital as we speak. But it was great. It was an awful game, really. Terrible stuff.
Oh yeah, not great.
Another oh god awful European final. These are apparently, here we have the high points of the season. It wasn't actually as bad as the one last week, but it wasn't great. But you know, and I thought that actually Fiorentina
did also have the unseemly sight of the West Ham fans flinging their apparently very hard plastic cups.
Well, those cups,
Fiorentina players.
Those cups are like, I mean, you know how hard they are, but they can be quite sharp. You know, and if you know, I'm not saying the West Ham fans were sharpening them in the stands before hurling them down, but you know, I mean, if one lands on your head having been thrown from 15 or 20 meters up, then well, I mean, it made a really nasty cut. Like, I mean, he was really bleeding. And it was terrible. So I guess West Ham are probably going to be playing their next couple of European games, which are going to be in the Europa League, probably behind closed doors with a sizable fine. It doesn't really seem as though they care too much about that at this point. I mean, the kind of mania at the end was just, I mean, I've never seen West Ham win a trophy. I mean, they did win one Did they win the FA Cup in 1980?
People were saying that it was their first major trophy. But I mean, have I just like completely, you know, memory hole Trevor Brooking with
Didn't
a header?
Didn't Trevor Brooking win the FA Cup in 1980 beating Arsenal? Yeah. They beat Arsenal. So, in fairness, I was alive when that happened, but I did not watch the game and do not remember it. This is the first time I've seen West Ham actually do it, and they really enjoyed it. They enjoyed it more than I can't remember the last time I saw a team enjoy winning a trophy that much.
Yeah.
Of course, there were shameful scenes.
And I will say that the end game, as in what happened in the immediate aftermath, I was like, I've never seen this before. And then I was like, well, actually, I do see it most Saturdays if I wanted to in Temple Bar. Just, you know, the world's biggest stag do, basically.
Oh, on the pitch. Yeah, well,
I should also say, we're talking immediately on the full-time whistle about a couple of minutes after. Who knows what's actually happened since then? And basically, you record something on a podcast now and something overtakes it 5 minutes later. So there may well have been crowd trouble or something else since this.
I hope not. Who would want to spoil an atmosphere like that with crowd trouble?
The last one on the pitch scenario. Jared Bowen was being interviewed on BT Sport. I don't know if you were watching it on BT Sport, lads, but he was being interviewed on the pitch.
No.
And a fan ran up and he was shouting something. I couldn't make it out, but I was pretty sure it was obscene. And Jared Bowen said, "Leave, just leave." And then literally seconds later, he was like, "To do it in front of these fans, absolutely unbelievable." It's like, Jared, we just know what you actually thought of the fans.
You don't want them within 2 inches of you. They're from a distance, these fans are the best in the world.
Man.
Brian Kerr, I was just going to mention on Virgin, was getting emotional, I thought, talking about David Moyes. He was saying that Moyes is well respected by everyone in the game. I had dealings with him. Unbelievable. Everybody will sort of will appreciate what he's done here and how he must feel to finally win a trophy. And you couldn't see Kerr. He was talking over the scenes you're describing, Murph. And I just thought, I thought it was quite striking. Of course, I've had personal...
Well, you've had dealings with him, Owen. Yeah, what about your dealings? Well, I mean, this is the time... Well,
the same as Brian Kerr. Dealings are... I've told you, we've talked before. We've talked...
Yeah, Owen, but come on.
You can give us more now, Owen.
This is your moment, Owen. You know, I too remember David Moyes, you know?
I told you about watching the bloody Man United match of the day when they came back against Southampton or something in the Solskjaer era with David Moyes. I couldn't help get the sense that Moyes was still somewhat bristling at, you know, how his own tenure ended at Manchester United.
See, this is it, Ken, isn't it?
Wasn't full throated in his support of the Solskjaer project, but listen, that's neither here nor there. He's there now. Where's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now, I ask you? Talking about how he could have signed Erling Haaland for 5 million. Well, he didn't, Ole.
Whoa.
And Moyes now has a trophy.
This isn't about trashing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tonight, Owen. This is about celebrating David Moyes.
One of the good guys.
A great career, which has had a real high point. When you think about it, like, lose a game tonight, West Ham probably sack him. And he's kind of in position where he's like, there's a pretty good chance he's going to finish his career without winning a single trophy. You know, notwithstanding League One. And the difference that makes tonight, like the difference that it makes to actually do it. I mean, Mickey Mouse trophy, as it may be. I mean, it is a thing. We should have more of these Mickey Mouse trophies. These Mickey Mouse trophies are great. It's actually the top trophies that are boring now. Trophies. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's of no importance and the two teams involved are apparently not very good when you look at their, you know, domestic leagues and so on. It meant a lot. And it was... I won't say it was exactly a fun watch. It was in the way of European finals. Often it was a little bit tense, but it had a great ending, and it had honestly the Moyes run.
I'm sorry, lads, I've literally just sent you a photograph of the Moyes run, and it is just so beautiful. It's like he's skipping down the pitch. It's just so amazing.
And Murph, the Moyes content has kept flowing since we recorded that bit. Have you seen him putting the medal around his dad's neck?
Of course, I have one. Cried tears of joy.
You get bonus points if you can tell me the team that his father managed, where young David's love of football was nurtured.
Those bonus points will stay in your pocket, Owen. I'm sorry.
The Drumchapel Amateurs.
Yeah, you can hold on to those Moyes bonus points. Yep.
Yeah, if you've ever heard him do deep dive interviews. I've listened to a lot of David Moyes' deep dives over the years, or the couple that he's done anyway. And the Drumchapel Amateurs always figure pretty strongly. So what a moment with him is that. There was also Moyes banging out the proclaimers in the dressing room. It just gets better and better.
Yeah.
Better.
The proclaimers, you can't go wrong, you know. There was something just drunk uncle at a wedding about him, but also very Scottish as well. I mean, it was obviously the proclaimers, but just the way he was dancing, there was just... He was in tune with his with his fatherland at that moment, I feel.
I think we all needed that hit of pure joy after the news of the Saudi Public Investment Fund, PGA Tour merger, which has shook up the sporting world. We put out our pod on this yesterday after we'd... So but it was a late enough one yesterday afternoon because we were waiting around to hear if Rory McIlroy had anything interesting to say at his press conference. And he had plenty to say in the end. So we might hear some words of Rory in here alongside our guests, Gavin Cooney and first Lawrence Donegan.
Oh, my goodness. Well, as a technical performance, absolutely brilliant. I mean, he is so deft at these things. But he looked dejected, he looked defeated, he looked like a guy who had been completely shafted, which of course he has been. Rory's long moved in these circles, these billionaire circles, Jimmy Dunn, this Ed Herley guy, who the two guys on the PGA Tour board who negotiated this deal with Monahan. He moves very easily in that seminal set, but those guys are, you know, they're billionaires for a reason. They are almost sociopathic. They are, you know, they will kill their granny, as we say in Scotland, to make a buck, and he finds himself the victim of that mentality, and I thought he looked pretty dejected. He did say he was felt like a sacrificial lamb. Absolutely, these guys made this deal behind closed doors, told no one, and they don't have to go and face the public to explain it. Unfortunately for Rory McIlroy, he does. He was utterly used. He was asked, does he still have confidence in Jay Monahan? There was only one way he could answer that question, but you kind of know what the answer is. Yeah. I mean, obviously, he had to say the opposite of what he feels, but my goodness, you kind of feel... It's hard to feel sorry for Rory McIlroy sometimes, but my goodness, on this morning of mornings, I felt pretty sorry for him.
Did you feel sorry for him, Gavin?
Yeah, I did. He's been absolutely shafted, as Lawrence points out there. Watching it, you just feel all the time that McIlroy is just such a reasonable man. I mean, he kept talking about, if I was to take myself out of this, this is what's good for professional golf. And the kind of, there is a kind of sick or grubby pragmatism to all this, that obviously how Jay Monahan and other people involved went about this and went about the last year or so is highly, highly distasteful, while at the same time it probably is a good deal for golf in the future. And then I found it very grim right at the end when he was so resigned to this. You know, it's just a reminder that, you know, this show and, you know, lots of other shows have covered sports washing and the involvement of nation states in other sports, and there's always been a finger pointed at the sports involved, and almost like a morality play is just like, you're too greedy, you've been too lax in regulations. But, you know, at the end of it all, like, if a major nation state has limitless resources and wants a piece of you can't do anything to stop it.
Yeah, that's the way that was probably in response to that Joe Callaghan question. We played that earlier on. He really did just look so resigned and defeated at that point. There was a good line from Kevin Clark in The Ringer. He said, McIlroy and the rest of the PGA loyalists learned a very valuable lesson about modern sports or modern life. If you do not sell out, someone will sell you out.
Yeah, so how bleak is the sum up of modern life that is. And obviously the man who saw this coming was the man we probably best placed to see this coming. That was Donald Trump.
Oh yeah, what did he say?
I mean, he said this last year on... the thing about Trump is, like, there's always a tweet or, you know, a tweet's equivalent on Truth Social after you've been banned on Twitter for inciting an insurrection and an attempted coup. Said that I think this was after Cam Smith won the Open, that I hope all the loyal golfers who stayed with the disloyal PGA Tour aren't left regretting their decision. I'm paraphrasing now. I can't.
Yeah, I've got it here. From the priest. All of those golfers that remain loyal, in inverted commas, to the very disloyal PGA will pay a big price when the inevitable merger with LIV comes and you get nothing but a big thank you from PGA officials.
That's almost exactly how it's turned out. You know, the thing about Trump, like, there's always a tweet. He generally predicts his own future behaviour. So if he's predicting the behaviour of another entity, safe to say that entity is as empty inside as Donald Trump is. And I think that's kind of ultimately what's happened with this story.
Well, he has got something wrong there, and I got it wrong at the top of the show as well. Trump said it's a merger with LIV, or preface it, had a premonition about it. I have used similar terminology, but this theme kept coming up, and we've spliced a couple of Rory clips together here.
The one thing that I think was really misconstrued yesterday was, you know, all the headlines were PGA Tour merges with LIV, and LIV has got nothing to do with this, right? I mean, it's the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund are basically partnering to create a new company. This has gotten, you know, I think that's where I was a little frustrated, because all I've wanted to do and all I've wanted, you know, in the past year from basically this tournament is to protect the future of the PGA Tour and protect the aspirational nature of what the PGA Tour stands for. And I hope that this does that, but, you know, I think with the headlines being merges with LIV, like, that's not the... I mean, if you look at the structure of how it's structured down, this new company sits above everything. Jay's the CEO of that. So technically, anyone that is involved with LIV now would answer to Jay. So, you know, the PGA Tour have control of everything. And the one thing as well is, you know, whether you like it or not, the PIF are going to keep spending money in golf. At least the PGA Tour now controls how that money is spent. You know, so I'd, you know, if you're thinking about some, you know, one of the biggest sovereign wealth funds in the world, would you rather have them as a partner or an enemy? At the end of the day, money talks, and you'd rather have them as a partner. But it's not LIV. I think that's the thing. I still hate LIV. Like, I hate LIV. Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does. And I think that's where the distinction here is. This is the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the PIF. Very different from LIV. All I've tried to do is protect what the PGA Tour is and what the PGA Tour stands for, and I think it will continue to do that. So, look, going forward, I hope that there's, you know, there may be a team element, and you're going to see maybe me, maybe whoever else play in some sort of team golf, but I don't think it'll look anything like LIV has looked, and I think that's a good thing.
I hate LIV. It's like Rory should get those t-shirts printed at some point when
someone else will
come back. But yeah, just at that point, he kept trying to make this distinction between LIV and the Public Investment Fund. LIV's got nothing to do with this, he says there. I went back and looked at the statement, Lawrence. There were 8 mentions of LIV in the statement, including lines like, PIF will initially be the exclusive investor in the new entity alongside the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and the DP World Tour. Like, that statement, it read like an ad for the success of LIV Golf. So if Rory feels people have got the wrong end of the stick there, I think that might have been in the way it was communicated by the various parties.
I'm guessing that would be a part of the what the PIF wanted. I mean, who cares about all this kind of corporate semantics? But the fact is, the PIF, the Saudis, have no interest in running a golf tour. They never had interest in running a golf tour. They're absolutely crap at it, as they've proved. LIV Golf is garbage. Nobody watches it. Nobody playing in it particularly looks like they care about it. So what the Saudis wanted all along was a part of the PGA Tour, was to be partnered in some kind of way with the PGA Tour. The mentions of LIV in the statement, you know, whatever. But I mean, I guarantee you, I'd go at the wall on this. There will be no LIV Golf Tour in 2024 because the Saudis are not interested in it. They want rid of it. They always wanted to be part of the PGA Tour. It's not actually a merger. And to be honest, you know, if you leave all the politics and the emotions to one side, this is actually a brilliant deal for both sides. It really is. You know, because the Saudis get what they always wanted. The PGA Tour gets, by the way, the more you talk to people about this, the PGA Tour's kind of basically skint. They've spent all their money this year on all the reserves on these elevated fields with these extraordinary purses. It was unsustainable. Somebody told me that they could maybe get to the middle of 2024 and they would be bust. So for them to get out from under this, you know, this crazy financial burden, to get out from under the crazy financial burden of the legal side of things, it is great from their perspective. Plus, you know, they'll get a bunch of money from the Saudis to do with what they will. The Saudis will never have a controlling interest in the PGA Tour. So obviously, Al Rumayyan will be the chairman of the board. but the CEO and the power brokers will always be able to overrule him if push comes to shove.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations, they are amazing.
Stupendous. Stupendous. Stupendous.
It has been a pretty big story, the merger in Golf Murph. One that stopped us and a lot of other people in their tracks. So much so that yesterday's, the football pod that has gone out that I was talking about, that went out late night, much of that show, and certainly much of that chat with Gabriele Marcotti and Jonathan Wilson, ended up being about the Saudis' latest moves in the football world and what the golf merger potentially means in the medium to long term there. There is also, though, a Champions League final happening on Saturday, lest we forget. And I think a lot of people have probably forgotten. So we'll play you a clip here of Gabriele and Jonathan trying their very best to find some avenue which Inter Milan could take to victory in Istanbul on Saturday night, though neither sounded convinced.
I think you've got a team that's mentally quite strong. You have a lot of, you know, veterans who've kind of been there, done that. That can certainly play into it as well. Yeah, I mean, you're right. They do seem fairly well prepared to be as good as they can be. Now, obviously, City needs to drop. Let me throw another one out there. We're all taking for granted that Pep's not going to go and do something weird like dropping Rodri for the final or whatever. But, you know, I don't think he's going to do this, but you never know. You know, what if he starts Alvarez? What if he puts Haaland on the bench? Because, you know, Haaland's enduring the worst goal drought of his career.
He hasn't scored in like four matches. Does that make it the worst?
Yeah, like it's one of those totally bogus stats. Yeah, it's four matches, but then two of those were the ones at the end of the season where I think he came on as a sub and didn't start. And he went four matches. I actually went back and checked this. He went four matches without scoring for Borussia Dortmund, I think, in his first season. I didn't go back to, you know, the Muppet League and Salzburg or whatever. But I don't think it's relevant in any way, shape, or form.
Jonathan, the Pep overthink that people have been waiting for all season isn't going to happen, is it?
Well, the problem, yeah, I mean, this is true of all journalism, that you when you look at something for long enough, you start placing far too much emphasis on tiny details. And one of the things you've got to actually do when you're really sort of specializing in a topic is step back and make sure you're not looking at not even the trees, but looking at the individual leaves on the trees. You've got to see the wood. But I was thinking, you know, maybe he panics playing against the front two. Maybe he does the game against Lyon, that quarter final, when everybody in the world looked at that and thought, well, City just turn up and win that. And then suddenly you looked at the lineup and thought, oh, what's he done? He's playing a back three. He's never played before. And he's terrified by the way Lyon break. And maybe he looks at Inter's front two and thinks, oh, yeah, maybe they're a bit like Brentford. Maybe we've got to change this. I mean, the thing he will have to sort out is if he plays Stones as a centre back, then Stones will not be able to step in midfield with the abandon that
he's surely not going to change the thing that has just absolutely steamrolled everyone for the last 4 months. I mean, that would be the maddest thing yet.
There's only one game since Stones started stepping in the midfield where they played against a front two, which was against, there's a game they won 4-1, Bournemouth. And Stones got replaced after 56 minutes of that game by Walker. So I think Stones must have been playing a right back in that game. So there's no evidence for this. You can't have one of your centre-backs stepping in the midfield if you're playing against two centre-forwards. You just can't do that. Now, maybe Stones just sits deep. It's not a problem. Maybe he plays at right back, but then I think you probably want Walker against DeMarco, given that DeMarco obviously is a wing-back, so he's starting from deeper. I think you probably would want Walker's pace. So that is just a little grid of doubt from which might come the oyster of overthinking and chaos.
The oyster of overthinking and chaos is a good Wilson line there.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of reaching for the possibility that Pep might horribly overthink this. That still doesn't mean Inter actually can take advantage of that. So there's a lot of things need to happen for Man City to not win this game on Saturday. And I think that list is just a little too long.
Point number one is Pep dropping Haaland. Signal that would send out to Inter. And there are a lot of other points after that whereby Inter would have to do a lot to win that game.
Yeah.
Ken is traveling to Turkey as we record, probably flying out around now. So Friday's pod will be a Ken Early postcard from Istanbul style show, which are always essential listening.
I had a number of Budweiser.
Yes, indeed. So for more of that,
I had forgotten
eyebrow
that
sort of stuff tomorrow. Yeah, well, listen, there have been a lot of moments like that over the years.
There really have. I mean, he has a 100% success rate of something daft happening to him while he's
every
on duty
time something
abroad,
daft so. Happens, and every time people get onto us and say, did he just engineer that? Did he make this up? B, did he engineer it? But he couldn't have made up what happened in the... I mean, he would have been the best actor that has ever been seen to make up what happened in the Oasis back in Doha. But did he make this mad experience up? Did he engineer it so that it would happen? No, in every case, he's got a great combination, kind of finding himself in weird situations abroad, but also having an incredible attention to detail that any great reporter has.
Yeah, leaning into it in a major way.
Yeah, he leans into it. Mad stuff happens and he observes it and delivers. Listen, you know this, even if you don't listen every week, or every day, I should say, you know what Ken's about when he's abroad. So get on that tomorrow.
Controversy follows him everywhere.
It does, as a wise Irish football man once said. €5 a month plus VAT. Sign up now. You'll hear all of the episodes ad-free as well. We've lots of the Liv. I was about to say the Liv story this week. Of course, it's not Liv, as Rory says. It has nothing to do with Liv. Liv is dead. I hate Liv, says Rory McIlroy. But the big golf story, lots of coverage of that already this week. And I'm sure probably more next week. Thanks for listening to this one. The Second Captain's Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Oh, and thank you, Ciarán.
And thank you, Owen.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.